Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and Christine Cagle is the Associate Director for Policy Planning and Communications in the CDC's Division for HIV/AIDS Prevention. She's speaking today to students at the University of South Dakota, and I had the chance to talk with her earlier about her speech titled "The New Era of HIV Prevention in a Changing Landscape." We begin with an overview of what HIV and AIDS looks like today in the United States.
As you know, back in the 80s, when HIV infections were first diagnosed or we learned about HIV, it was a death sentence for many people because we didn't know how it was transmitted. We didn't have any treatment therapies. And so 30 years from that point to now, we have many strategies, especially in prevention, that make it a changing landscape, and it's a new era of HIV prevention, from biomedical interventions to one of the core strategies is treatment as prevention. Also the advent of what's called the pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is targeted, it's a daily pill targeted to people who are HIV negative. Now they have to commit to taking the pill daily, and they have to commit to follow-up care with their physician every 3 months. But when we talk about PrEP, we don't want people to think this is a prevention method that's a singular one. PrEP should still be taken and with consistent condom use and with achieving viral load suppression. We also have what's called data to care, and data to care is focusing on people who are diagnosed with HIV but who have fallen out of care or dropped out of care. So it's a goal to work with the health department and the clinical provider to get those people back into care. Now, an ideal model would be that the health department has data, and they have data on people who are diagnosed but are not in care, and they work with the clinical provider to contact the patient and get that person back into care. Now, some people who get diagnosed never access care, so you also want to get those people in care for the first time. Another strategy that we're pursuing right now is HIV care continuum. Now, what I mean by the HIV care continuum is that you have data about the number of people who are diagnosed, the number of people linked to care, the number of people or the percent of people on antiretroviral therapy, and then the percent of people virally suppressed. And that's the end goal, is to get HIV-infected people virally suppressed so that your viral load is undetectable. Doesn't mean that you still can't transmit HIV, but so you also ask them to keep using condoms consistently. But if your viral load is suppressed, then you're less likely to have full-blown AIDS or have other non-AIDS serious illnesses. The other major method or strategy in this new era is the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. As you know, President Obama, the Obama administration, released the strategy in July 2010, and the strategy outlines four goals, you know, decrease new HIV infections, improve linkage to care, reduce health disparities, and in August of this year, it was updated to have a fourth goal, which is intensify efforts in communities that are most affected by HIV. And the strategy is the first strategy for domestically that looks at the nation as a whole. You know, President Bush did the PEPFAR in international countries, but this strategy is a coordinated federal strategy, meaning all of us, all the federal agencies work together, from the Department of Defense, Department of Energy, Health and Human Services, Department of Labor, to come together, and Justice as well, to work together on reducing the number of infections. It also builds on the progress that we've made in improving care for people living with HIV. And that's sort of the key, is that once people are diagnosed, it's really important that they get into care and they stay on treatment so that they're virally suppressed. Now, you have a lot of people, because HIV is still sort of this exceptional disease and there's a lot of stigma surrounding it. And so people, especially in rural areas, might not access care, or they don't want to get tested because maybe in the health department they know the nurse there, or they go to church with the nurse there. And so they have to travel many miles to each get tested as well as to access care.
I was surprised to read HIV is still an epidemic, that there are still tens of thousands of newly diagnosed patients every year. I don't know why that caught me as a surprise, but it did.
Yeah, there's over 1.2 million people living with HIV, but CDC estimates 50,000 new infections annually. Now, of that 50,000, 20,000 are HIV-related deaths. So you have a net increase of 30,000 each year of people who have the potential to transmit HIV. We kind of don't want to say an epidemic anymore. We just kind of focus on the fact that people are living longer and healthier lives, but there are transmissions still occurring. And you ask that since people know how it's transmitted, you know it's not transmitted through biting or spitting, then why are there so many new cases? And that's what we're trying to figure out, because prevention is key, but knowing how it's transmitted, you want people to take individual responsibility for HIV infections. There was a case in Atlanta, for example, just recently where there a young man was arrested for knowingly exposing two women to HIV, and one of them, I think, had HIV. And my thought, because she was very angry, but my thought was, why were you having sex without a condom? So that's the key there, is people know how it's transmitted, but a lot of people aren't taking precautions. And I think also a lot of the younger people didn't see the ravages of the disease that we saw in the 80s. And I think if you look back when there was no cure, there was no treatment, and stigma was so high, I don't know. But it would for me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think that's a valid point that the young people today don't have that memory. They don't know what it was like. And the treatment, and as you said, people are living longer with treatment and healthier lives, so they just think perhaps that it's not that big of a deal.
Maybe. And also, we look at, you know, we can't pinpoint why, but we look at some of the social determinants of health, like poverty, incarceration, homelessness, commercial sex workers, race and gender discrimination, and even for transgender individuals. I know that Caitlyn Jenner made the big splash, and when you talk to a lot of the transgender people that we work with, there's still a lot of violence and discrimination. So having her come out maybe got publicity for the transgender community, but to them, some of them, it says too much visibility means violence. And so they're not all rich, white, former men. Most transgender individuals that we see are transgenders of color. And so they experience a lot of the social determinants of health, which could be another reason for so much transmission or acquisition.
Now, you mentioned earlier about that medication for non-infected people. Mm-hmm. So is this
Correct.
Given to people who are at high risk, that
yes.
fall into the high-risk category?
Correct.
And how do you reach out to that group?
Well, we're trying to, CDC's working with healthcare providers because we know that PrEP is 92% effective, but getting people, is costly, however, and getting people, the people that are at the highest risk to access that is going to be a problem, or we see it as a problem, but what we're trying to do is to make awareness, make healthcare providers aware of the drug, and try to work with them to treat patients who are at high risk to offer this as an alternative.
Okay.
Or as another prevention method.
A prevention method. Sure. the people who are at risk. It seems as though that the statistics that I read, the most people who are becoming infected or are most at risk is all through sexually transmitted diseases and not as much as through
heterosexual.
Drug use.
Right.
So is that because we have needle exchanges and those kinds of things, or how is it that one has decreased so much, I guess, in the drug use?
We actually see the injection drug use, like less than 20%, as a real accomplishment. And I think syringe services programs are a key and getting people and treating not just HIV, but the disease of substance abuse. So it goes hand in hand. And I want to talk to you about the majority of infections are male-to-male sexual contact. Heterosexual among women has gone down, as well as heterosexual contact for men as well. And in the male-to-male sexual contact, the highest, 64% of HIV diagnosis are among male-to-male sexual contact. And actually, injection drug use for females is down 3% of the diagnosis, and injection drug use among males is 4%. So it really has gone down. But did you hear about the recent outbreak in Indiana of people who inject drugs?
Hmm.
It was in June of this year. It started in early January. It's a town called Austin, Indiana. And what we found was that people were injecting oxymorphone, which is an opiate. And it was a small town of less than 5,000. And actually what was going on was, and you usually see injection drug use as an urban problem, not a rural problem. And what was happening, there was just one doctor in town, and they were getting the drugs through prescription as well as illegal. But because the drug lasts for a short time, they were injecting maybe 4 to 6 times a day. And they were injecting with grandparents and grandfathers and mothers and children. And so at the end of June, CDC went there with other federal agencies. And actually, from 2009 to 2013, that town had less than 9 cases. And so when the disease intervention specialist saw an increase of 3 cases, she really started looking at patterns and talking and did some contact tracing. And then we came down. And they didn't have syringe services programs because the governor didn't allow it. So they did an emergency one, and then he signed one into a law in June of this year. But there were a total of 170 cases, 100% all white, non-Hispanic, and multi-generational. And so what we're looking at now is maybe we should start looking in these rural areas because, as you know, there's stigma surrounding substance abuse. So even when they set up a temporary syringe services program, some of the residents were too stigmatized to actually come. And then we set up some methadone assisted therapy in the state, and we did an array of interventions and services. And what's good about it, it showed public health at work, because it wasn't just CDC, it was the state, it was the local. Indiana University actually came and did testing, the medical students did testing. And so you had the Food and Drug Administration, you had the Substance Abuse and Mental Services, Health Services Administration. So it was public health in action. And I just bring that up because we're looking at different rural areas now to see if there's a potential for drug abuse.
So now you're taking this message to college campuses.
Is
it because we need to re-educate the youth about HIV?
Yes, and we have a lot of what we have found at the 30th anniversary of, I hate to call it the anniversary, but the 30th year of HIV, is that we don't have the activists that we used to have when the HIV first emerged. And so people had become very, like it didn't exist anymore. In fact, Cara, the people in Indiana, in Austin, did not even, they thought HIV was a gay man's disease. They had very little awareness of transmission and that it doesn't discriminate. And so people got very complacent. That's the word I was looking for. So we did some campaigns to heighten the awareness that it's still a problem and that it is preventable. And that if you get on therapy, that you can live. You don't have that death sentence that it used to be. And so taking it to younger people into college campuses, we think is excellent, and trying to reach them on Facebook or other social media, because, you know, that's where you mostly reach kids today.
Right, and you have to just keep talking about it. You can't let it. You can't become complacent with
Correct.
A disease like HIV.
Which is preventable.
Christine Cagle is the Associate Director for Policy, Planning, and Communications in the CDC's Division for HIV/AIDS Prevention. She's speaking today to students at the University of South Dakota. The title of her speech, The New Era of HIV Prevention and a Changing Landscape.